Our summer reading series continues on The World Cafe. Leader of the Irish-American band Black 47, Larry Kerwin is not your typical Irish immigrant. But he has a lot in common with the grand sweep of young people who left Ireland for New York in the 70s and 80s. His new memoir, Green Suede Shoes, An Irish-American Odyssey, and its accompanying CD, Elvis Murphy's Green Suede Shoes, are more than just Larry's story or a chronicle of Black 47, his band. They are a look at New York City and its music scene during a very interesting times. I start the interview by asking Larry why the time was right for his memoir.
Well, a couple of things. One was both my parents passed away in the last couple of years, and I don't know, whatever it was, I felt freer to tell the story of the early days of growing up in Ireland. The second was, a lot of Ireland, for instance, is changing and fading away, and I wanted to get it down in print, you know. And a lot of the New York that I knew was the same thing. You know, New York is a very different city now than it was when I came here in the 70s, and it almost seems surreal thinking back on it.
Well, you know, it's funny, the greatest icon or you can say about that is everybody in Ireland when you were growing up wanted to move to New York, and now people are moving back to Ireland. So
I know, it's really strange.
So
it's more expensive in my hometown in Wexford than it is in New York.
Oh, boy, that's strange. Well, talk a little bit about what Wexford was like and what it meant to you, and I'd love to hear you say why you felt more comfortable to have your parents not with us when you told this story.
Well, you know, you're able to write about them really objectively and in a way that they're not there to contradict you in a way, so that if you say something that was your impression at the time, you don't have to worry about hurting their feelings. So for instance, you know, my parents were great. My father was a seaman and a merchant marine, and he would go away for 6 months at a period and then come back for 3 months. It was always strange, especially when you were very young, to have this person that was very close to you leave and then be around again and always there at that point, because he'd have 3 months free and he was just sitting around the house and then he was gone. So there was a huge amount of emigration in my hometown then, Wexford, but my father going away and with so many men going off to England to work and then maybe coming home for 2 weeks in the summer and for Christmas. So it was a strange setup.
When you let's cross the Atlantic, and when you arrive in the U.S. After a fitful start the first time, where you end up touring Pennsylvania as an Irish tenor,
Lorenzo Kerwin.
what was your Lorenzo?
Yeah, I spilled a this is a Pennsylvania story. I'm in the Poconos. I got a job as a waiter, as a busboy in one of those big resorts up there in the Poconos, and I spilled a dish of spaghetti or something into a mafiosa's lap, and instead of taking me out, he was very fond of me and got me a gig playing in Holiday Inns around the state of Pennsylvania. But they didn't tell me beforehand that I was being billed as Lorenzo Kerwin, the great Irish tenor. So people would show up to hear this tenor singing Italian songs or whatever, and there was I singing my Bob Dylan copies and whatever I could think of to get through four sets a night.
Oh, my God.
That was that was another learning experience.
Indeed. There was a lot of Irish immigration here to the States at that point, and, of course, a lot of the center became the Bronx and Bainbridge Avenue. And a lot of people were working construction at that point, but you had kind of a leg up in being a musician. Talk a little bit about I think the book is particularly poetic about the experience on Bainbridge Avenue and who everybody was and what that scene was like. Does it still exist as it was?
No, it changed pretty soon after Black 47 formed. It moved around 93. The South Bronx was kind of moving up into the North Bronx, and the Irish basically left this area around Bainbridge and 204th Street. It's hard to imagine it even now, but it was this, say, 3-4 block area that had maybe 40 bars in it. And there was music there every night. And that was one of the reasons Black 47 got such a good boosting start, in that They needed bands at that point. And it was a fascinating scene because the Irish would work as, you know, on construction sites, the men, and the women would work as nannies or as waitresses or barmaids and down in the city in Manhattan. And then everybody would come up to the Bronx at nighttime to dance and drink and to meet up with each other and have romances. And so I was able to use all that in the early Black 47 songs, you know, this experience I had, because it was just very strange. Here was Ireland in the Bronx, in the center of the Bronx. It was a kind of an amazing thing.
Well, the Black 47 songs always paint this as very romantic. Was it as romantic as you painted? Have you taken license here?
Well, you know, within the culture, there is romance. You know, things could be happening at a night, and you would see a man and a woman meet for the first time from the stage, and you could visualize what was going on with them. Mm. But as a band member, it was rough. You know, especially with Black 47, was really rough, because we went. You see, my idea with Black 47 was that we would take a batch of original songs and go into one of these Irish bars. Going to all these Irish bars, but instead of playing the cover music that they were used to, that we would play, Black 47 songs. And this was met with outright horror, you know? Because people wanted to come, you know, and get drunk in a nice environment. And here was this group that, you know, had kind of grown up in CBGBs and places like that and wanted total attention and were playing original music and loud and with attitude. So there was a riot pretty much for the first year everywhere we would play in the Bronx. And it would be violent, you know, there'd be bottles thrown, there was a lack of romance in the sense that the audience hated you. But,
well, what turned the corner for the band? Because obviously there's adoration now from the same audience.
Well, we got better, I think, too. You know, there's people in the Irish scene who still wouldn't like it because we were political too. We had a political agenda to have the situation in the north of Ireland kept on the front burner in the U.S. That's something we still do. We just got better, and people got more used to us. And then, you see, we started to attract people, and we started to attract women. If you can do that in an Irish bar, once you get a few women in there, the lads hear about it. And go, yeah, those Black 47 guys, you know, I don't really like them, but some nice women there with them, so I'd go along. And that was the turning point, I think. Yeah, get a few girls come and see you.
Larry Kerwin is our guest, and I'm not going to make him tell all the other stories in green suede shoes, but suffice it to say, there are many, and one of the chapters that actually lays the groundwork for the political nature of the band is led off by the song James Connolly, and maybe you should tell it, because there are certainly some non-Irish American and just people who don't know the history of Ireland, who James Connolly was and why this song became important.
Well, James Connolly was actually born in Scotland of Irish parents, and he came back to Ireland to organize in the early 1900s because there was such poverty over there and such bad conditions for working people. And basically he got run out of the country and came to the U.S. and worked for the Wobblies here, the International Workers Union here. Eventually went back to Ireland and tried to organize the Catholics and Protestants together in Belfast, got beaten at that again, and then came to my hometown, which left a big impression on me because he was still remembered there. It was a small town, but it had a lot of heavy industry in it. And Connolly and his boss, Jim Larkin, came to Wexford to organize the people, and the bosses just immediately said, everybody is fired. Everybody is thrown out of work. We will have nothing to do with unions. And this set off a conflict in the town for about a year where the people basically starved because they had no way of living. And it led to a lot of bitterness in the town that was still there 50 years later as I was growing up. So Connolly was just a major figure in my life. He eventually got shot by the British in a chair. He was too weak to stand up. And he was just an organizer who really felt that the people should have not just work, but should have dignity, the dignity to live and to give an education to their children. So he became a major figure in my life. And then when we formed Black 47, I wrote the song James Connolly to not just to commemorate him, but to be a light for people everywhere, that you don't have to take it from your boss. You have a right to a decent job, and you have a right to a decent education and to a decent standard of living. And that's James Connolly.
Marching down on Connolly Street with a starry plow on high, there goes a Citizen Army with their fists raised in the sky. Leading them is a mighty man with a mad rage in his eye. My name is James Connolly, I didn't come here to die, but to fight for the rights of the working man, the small farmer too. Protect the proletariat from the bosses and their screws. So hold on to your rifles.
That's James Connolly from Black 47, and our guest today is Larry Kerwin, who's written about that song and all of his experiences in Green Suede Shoes, his new book that is out on Thunder's Mouth Press. It would probably be good for us to talk about variety. I don't think anybody would ever believe that Bridie was not a real person, but the story isn't quite the same as that in Funky Cayley, but it's close, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about first love, you know. I'd moved to Dublin to study and to work, and I met Bridie at a dance. And she was 6 months older than me, and as most people realize, most women are just far ahead of guys at that age, at 18 or 19. She always knew a little more than I did, but it was a wild time in Dublin. There was a lot of politics going on, a lot of music, a lot of ferment in the air in the late 60s, early 70s. And I just didn't want to get married. That was the problem. I didn't want to settle down and call it a day at that point. That's the way I saw marriage at that point, that it was all over as soon as you got married. And we broke up not particularly well. And years later in the Bronx, I was reminded of it and wrote the song Funky Cayley. Changed it a little bit, but essentially, that was the emotion that set the song off.
Bridie broke down and started to bawl when I told her about me divorce from the bank. She said I got news of me on a store. I'm 2 months late, it's not with the rent. She said I'd have to be telling her dad, so we drove the Morris Minor to Cork. The alpha said you got two choices, castration or a one-way ticket to New York. Oh, Bridie, what can I do, girl?
And that is Funky Cayley from Black 47. Our guest is Larry Kerwin today here on the World Cafe. Thanks a lot for talking to us about this book. And thanks a lot for writing it, too. It really, as you say, it evokes a time period when you could live in New York City dirt cheap and do all these things. I suppose you could still now. I don't know if it would be quite as much fun.
No, the city has changed because it's become so expensive to live here that you couldn't come in the same way and get a couple of gigs a week and live down the East Village. Now you really have to get a job and work at it. So it's changed the whole way art is made. But if I might say something about the book, too, one of the reasons as I was writing it that I realized what I wanted to get down was that So many people go into the music business with their eyes closed, and I certainly did. What I tried to do in the book is show in as unsentimental a way as possible how this the business of music works. There are no real mysteries in this, except, you know, there's no one going to come along and give it to you. And the music business has changed a lot now anyway, so you're not going to get the big deal from record labels anymore unless maybe you're a Britney Spears type. So you've got to go out there and play live and be honest in that way. And that's the way to become a great band anyway.
Larry Kerwin, his memoir, Green Suede Shoes, An Irish-American Odyssey, is published by Thundermouth Press.